Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Wyatt Graham on the influence of Jesus' family members in the early church.
We can also see that the brothers, the family, the relatives of Jesus, although they recorded their connection to him, didn't necessarily use that for power and authority. We have no records of that. In fact, if you read Jude and James' letter, they almost underplay that because they want to promote Christ and not their special status. So there's a real sense of humility, even though there are bloodline relatives.
Wyatt Graham next. Dr. Wyatt Graham says the family of Jesus were key leaders in the early church, and their influence continued until at least 250 AD. Spencer Dahlke talks now with Dr. Graham about his piece, What Happened to the Family of Jesus? He's executive director of the Davenant Institute in South Carolina.
When did you write this piece and why?
Yeah, so I don't remember, like, it was sometime in January, so January 2025. Probably for a couple of reasons. One, I'm teaching a New Testament class, and I was doing a little bit of research on the brothers of Jesus, namely, well, in particular, Jude. So the two gospel books, James and Jude, in the New Testament, are both written by brothers of Jesus. And as I was getting into that, I realized there's actually a lot more here in the family of Jesus. And one of the things that fascinates me is that when I talk to people, we often think of, like, the Bible kind of came out of the sky in the middle of nowhere and it just appeared and there's no connection to anything, and then boom, you know, then the Bible's here. But there's a rich history, and in fact the family members of Jesus played a really important role in the earliest generations of the church, and it seems like a little bit later on as well. And I think just knowing that the Bible and Christianity is part of real history not only gives you some confidence that it's true, just generally speaking, but also should fascinate us, I think, just as Christians, to understand a little bit more about the origins of Christianity, I suppose.
Probably one of the most basic questions to ask to, you know, kick off the discussion as well is, who were Jesus' brothers?
That's a good question. So in the gospel books, the four brothers of Jesus are identified by name: James, Joseph, Simon, and, well, it's Judas, but we call him Jude. It's just that we don't want to associate him with the disciple who betrayed Jesus. So, you know, the epistle to Judas, you know, we call the epistle of Jude, just for that sake. Those are the four named brothers of Jesus in the gospel books. There's a mention of his family as well. He seems to have sisters, and church history remembers his sisters, two of his sisters who are called Mary and Salome. But his brothers are named. There could be more. Those are the four that we know from the gospel books. The word in the Bible is brothers. There has been some debate in church history whether or not how he their brothers. Some people say, well, he's brothers from Joseph's side of the family, and Joseph is like a widower, and he had prior children, etc. But we don't know any of that from the Bible. All we know is the Bible says he has these four brothers: James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. And the two brothers that all of us know, even if you haven't connected the dots per se, are James and Jude, because they wrote the letters titled James and Jude. And if you read the book of Acts, the brother of Jesus, James, is kind of a big deal. He's all throughout the book of Acts, but in particular, if you ever read Acts 15, there's this sort of famous passage where the elders of the Jerusalem church get together, and the apostles, and they're all talking about things. Peter gives an argument. Barnabas and Paul are there, and the discussion is how we should think about Gentiles being part of the church, which up until this time had been primarily Jewish, simply because the apostles and Jesus are Jewish, and it starts in the gospel begins in Jerusalem and spreads to Samaria and then to the ends of the world. And during this discussion, they're trying to think through this, and it's interesting that James, the brother of Jesus, says, all right, I've heard everything, now let me give you my judgment. And he lays out some Old Testament context from Amos chapter 9. And then he says, I judge, and he explains, basically, I judge that the Gentiles can be included, etc. And everyone seems to agree with him, and they write this letter, and it's kind of a big moment in the book of Acts to explain how the gospel goes to both Jews and Gentiles. But historically, it's just utterly fascinating how much deference is given to James. And Paul actually, in the letter to the Galatians, if mentions that there are really three pillars in the church, Peter, or Cephas, John, and James, the brother of the Lord. And we also, so he ends up being like pretty kind of a big deal, which is important, because in the gospel books, you learn that early on, they didn't believe in Jesus and or didn't follow him. At least they might have thought he was like the brother or whatever, but they didn't believe in him as Messiah or the divine son of God. And I think that's probably one of the most like understandable things in the gospel books. Could you imagine that you're the brother of Jesus? You grew up with him and he's like, by the way, I'm the Messiah we all waited for, and I'm divine. And you're like, oh, brother, you know? So there's some realism there, but I assume that once he resurrects from the dead, the brothers of Jesus have no excuse anymore. I mean, the Bible doesn't tell us the exact moment, but that seems pretty obvious to me. And when he appears to the 500 in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul says he also appeared to James, his brother. It's very interesting. He's named there, which tells you that he probably gave a very specific message or commission to James, which may be why he's such an influential person in the early church in Jerusalem, kind of akin to the apostles in terms of authority. And interestingly enough, Paul also tells us in 1 Corinthians that the brothers of the Lord have wives and are traveling around as sort of like authoritative missionaries telling the Jesus story. So all that to say, there are four named brothers, James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas, two of whom we know are hugely influential. James in particular, Judas, seems like he might have less name recognition. For example, in his letter, he opens it up by saying, like, James, you know, Jude, the brother of James, where James kind of just says, I'm James. And everyone kind of knows him. So there's some interesting things there. Church history then, of course, remembers them as hugely influential figures. Presumably, the other brothers, Joseph and Simon, are traveling missionaries, as Paul mentions. We don't know exactly where they go, like in terms of like cities and things. But there's an early Christian historian named Hegesippus who says, we can basically say that the family of Jesus stayed in the Palestinian area, like the borders of what we call Israel today. And there they had a long-lasting ministry, and they had families there, and they traced their lineage still back to the family of Jesus. They knew that they were part of that family. They actually called themselves the Despazani, which is the people of the Lord, essentially. And that's what they're called. And they know the last living relative of Jesus that we know about is dies about between AD 249 and 51 during a persecution. And his name is, it's kind of funny, it almost sounds like Conan, but it's Conan the Gardener. And he seems to be the last living relative that we know of. And he has a written testimony that we have in an account of his death. And he actually says, I am of the city of Nazareth in Galilee. I am of the family of Christ, whose worship I have inherited from my ancestors, namely those Despenosi, those who follow the Master, and whom I recognize as God over all things. So for at least 200 years, we have groups of people who recognize that they descended from the family of Jesus, whether it's nephews, cousins, whatever. And obviously the Bible has more relatives named than I articulated here, but it's really interesting. While the sisters of Jesus are kind of only hinted at in the Bible, church history remembers them as having the names of Mary and Salome. And that's really important, because if you're really nerdy and you do a study of regions and names at particular times in history, you'll see in the first century in the Palestinian area, 50% of all women's names were either Mary or Salome at that time, likely because the Hasmonean dynasty, which was like the Jewish kingdom at the time, there were royal members with those two names, sometimes in various forms. So there is a sense where they're kind of like famous names, so they're all, you name your kids after them. Why that's relevant is it's it's very likely then those are their actual names, because you have a 50% chance that it is, really. They're either going to be Mary Salome or some other name. So we do have good indications of the names of the family of Jesus. And there's more relatives as well that are remembered in history and also named in the Bible, too.
Something you mentioned in your article, and I know even there you're saying you didn't want to really get too much into this idea, yeah, but you did at least mention that different church traditions interpret the word brothers differently depending on, you know, their the theology that they may espouse. Like Catholics, I believe, want to believe in the perpetual virginity of Mary.
Right.
So Jesus obviously can't have brothers. What evidence is for that? And then how do the different churches, at least the church traditions, interpret the word?
So the word is brother. So it's not like that. That's not ambiguous. The question is, can brother refer to like a broader set of relatives? And while it is hypothetically possible that it can, it's not the usual use of the word brother, but there is evidence that that's a possible use. At the same time, there doesn't appear to be a lot of biblical evidence that tells you that. However, there is a long-standing tradition that Mary remained a virgin forever, never had children, beyond Jesus, of course. And therefore, so you have different views. So in church history, you have a view, I think, at least associated with Jerome, who was a Bible translator, translated the Bible into Latin. And he says, look, the word brothers here could easily just be cousins, and therefore they're part of Jesus's family. Yes, I think there's even some more kind of additions to that where Jesus maybe lived with his cousins, and you see, because there's all the stuff going on there. So that's one view that would be pretty common, I think, among Roman Catholics today. And that kind of vouchsafes the perpetual virginity of Mary. I don't know if that's linguistically and contextually strong. Probably a stronger view would be one that is present in the Eastern Orthodox Church. And that's essentially that the brothers named are brothers of Jesus, but they're indirect brothers. Namely, they're from Joseph, his father, from his first marriage. And he's a widower, and he actually remarries Mary, and they don't have any other kids. That one, to me, is at least kind of is more according to the obvious sense of the Bible. And I think some Protestants have even held that view. It's not like it's one you can't hold. To me, it's not obvious from the text. There is some historical records that seem to indicate that's true. However, part of that could just be reading into the biblical text of Mary as a virgin. And there is some sort of aesthetic pushes in the earliest, among earliest Christianity, where singleness and virginity is viewed as sort of, you're almost like a modern missionary. You're like on mission for Jesus because you didn't get married. And you know, you can kind of see this in 1 Corinthians 7, where Paul says, I wish you were like me, kind of remain single. Jesus in Matthew 19 talks about those who are made eunuchs for the kingdom's sake, which is a metaphor for being unmarried, essentially. So there is some indications that some early Christians really valued the importance of remaining single to be on mission for Jesus, and they would have assumed, based on some of the biblical language around Mary and her virginity and purity and all this kind of stuff, that she would have, of course, remained that way on mission for Jesus, her son. We know, for example, in the book of Acts, she was one of the disciples of Jesus. In fact, well, John 19, she's at the cross, and then also in Acts, she's in the upper room praying. Like she's a huge leader in the early church, so. It could be that people are kind of reading back into that and making assumptions. You know, at the end of the day, I guess you'll find out in heaven. If I'm going to say, what does the Bible allow me to say? I think the Bible allows me to say that these are the brothers of Jesus. It seems straightforward to me that they are the biological brothers of Jesus from Joseph and Mary. I'm not unafraid to say that. Hypothetically, I could be wrong, and it wouldn't hurt my feelings, and, you know, we'll know in heaven. It's not going to change anything significant. They would still be, you know, is it stepbrothers? Is that the right terminology in this case? In the Eastern Orthodox and occasional Protestant view. The Roman Catholic view, however, I don't find super compelling. Just the word means brothers. It's less compelling to me to view them as cousins or something like that.
Well, I'm with Dr. Wyatt Graham. We are currently discussing his article written for his blog, wyattgraham.com, titled What Happened to the Family of Jesus? Specifically, his earthly family. I guess my next question for you, one thing that was kind of interesting to me is a little earlier you mentioned James not having to really identify himself. He can just say James, servant of Jesus, and people know who he is. You also mentioned in the article that he did also come to be known as James the Just because there were a lot of people named James in that period.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the distinguished James, yeah.
I was curious, where did that name come from?
Well, according to Hegesippus and even some independent testimony was it Josephus, talks about him. He's James the Just. Largely, it came through his lifestyle. It seems to be from Hegesippus, who wrote basically five books of kind of like church history really early on in the 100s. He basically says James was frequently in Jerusalem. He was a leader there. He would pray frequently. He was known to go to the temple and to be on his knees, and he would pray for his countrymen to receive the gospel of Jesus. And everyone who saw him knew that he was a good man. He was a man who prayed. And even unbelievers, almost as a whole, could see him and say, oh, this is a just man. And it's really important. I mean, his testimony, yes, he was a preacher. Yes, he was a leader. But he's actually known, at least remembered, as someone who prays. Utterly fascinating. He certainly got that from his brother Jesus. If you think about the gospel books, it seems like every time Jesus makes a significant decision, he goes to a lonely place or whatever and prays. I mean, prayer and action seem to be the dual aspects of Jesus's practical life. And James, however he did, he picked up on that. I mean, obviously, you know your brother, so you kind of watch him in action. And then after he resurrects from the dead, you probably go, ah, I should probably imitate his life. And so he prayed for his people. And this, he ends up sort of convincing a lot of people, I think, towards Christianity. And so a number of religious leaders get frustrated that he is. And they kind of arrest him and ask him to kind of push people away from Jesus and so on. And as you might imagine, he doesn't listen to them and in fact promotes Jesus publicly in front of everyone. And people are very frustrated. Religious leaders are very frustrated at him. And so he is stoned. And I think it's Hegesippus or Josephus, I can't remember which, says that. So he was stoned, but he wasn't dying right away. So someone basically clubbed him to death. And that's how he dies. Now, this ends up being a big problem because everyone knows that he was just. They know that he was innocent. And so the high priest at that time is actually sacked. Who was behind the sentence and execution of James. So even in his death, people were like, this is wrong. Like, this shouldn't have happened. Which I suppose is a good when you think of just Christians of the past, it's a great testimony that you, though you may be put to death, people in your death will see that you are a just and good man. So, yeah, that's the record we have from, Hegesippus gives the positive interpretation. Josephus, who was a Jewish Roman historian, just kind of mentions it. He's not really on James's side, obviously, but we have some independent witnesses about that. So, yeah, I think essentially he's called the Just. Yes, to distinguish him from all the other Jameses. Really, it's the name Jacob. It's, I guess, anglicized as James. There's a ton of them out there. And you have to have, like, James the Little, James the Just, or whatever. In order to know, or you say who the parent is or something like that, because it's such a common name. So James the Just is a sort of way to distinguish him, but also to describe that he was genuinely a good and just man.
Speaking of, I guess, sort of James' martyrdom, taking it a little broader, how did the testimony of Jesus' family advance the gospel in the early days of the church?
Well, you probably would say much in every way that they almost become like the apostles in a sense. They're not like they're different, obviously, but they are called like the brothers of the Lord. When Paul mentions James is like the brother of the Lord, like this is someone that you should think about. Jesus, while he appears to the 500 and I think to Peter, he also appears to James. Like there are these significant points. And like I said, in Acts 15, James is viewed as sort of like the tiebreaker. Well, that's not the right way. He's viewed as the guy you just listen to on decisions, you know. So they seem to be very important. As I mentioned earlier, they are traveling missionaries. And while we don't know the full significance of all that they did, when you read the book of Acts, you can kind of just infer that they did the kinds of things that Peter and Paul did, as articulated in the book of Acts. Luke, who wrote Acts, was someone who went alongside of Paul, so of course he highlights in the latter half Paul's story, but that doesn't mean that there weren't other missionaries. In fact, all the, with the exception of Jude, all the apostles were seemingly traveling missionaries. James probably stayed near Jerusalem, given the indications that we have from the book of Acts, but it doesn't mean that he couldn't travel around to the cities and villages and towns as sort of a local missionary. And their church work seems to have been so significant that their family, many of their families seems to have converted. Like I said, they called themselves the Desposeni. So you have that. You can you have historical records from someone like Julius Africanus, who talks about this group of people, that they are relatives of Jesus, leaders in the church. You have a couple of grandsons of Judas, or Jude, who are significant in the church in the 90s and 80s, and they are leaders as well. They're so significant, in fact, that they are brought before the Emperor Domitian, at least according, I think, Hegesippus again here. They're brought before him because they're known as church leaders, and they're known to be part of the family of Jesus. And it seems like the Emperor Domitian in the 90s, so the 90s would be John the Apostle is probably still alive, and a few disciples of Jesus are. You know this from other authors like Papias and Polycarp and Irenaeus. There's a few disciples of Jesus still alive in Asia Minor, modern-day Turkey. And some are those, you know, people mentioned the book of Acts, for example. Some of the daughters, is it Stephen who is a prophet and has prophetess daughters? Anyways, the three daughters of that person in the book of Acts are still alive, and they're telling the Jesus story. There's a bit of a school that forms in the Ephesus area, where John the Apostle and then John the Elder and then Aristion, another disciple of Jesus, are. And Christianity's kind of blooming. It's getting bigger and bigger. And the family of Jesus is so known to be instrumental in this that the Emperor Domitian's like, hey, we need to investigate this family. Like, what's going on here? Why are they following this dead criminal? So he supposedly is persecuting the race of David, the family members of Jesus. And he, in fact, arrests two grandsons of Jude, who would be the great-great nephews of Jesus. Is that how that works? I think so. And or just great nephews. And they're arrested, and Domitian's like, okay, you're related to this Jesus guy. What was his kingdom about? It's a sort of like a Pilate type scene. And he wants to know all about the kingdom. In fact, we have a record of what they said. These grandsons of Jude had the name Zocher and James, or Jacob. And they said of the kingdom of God that Jesus, you know, was bringing him, it, the kingdom, was neither of the world nor earthly, but heavenly and angelic, and would appear at the end of the world when he would come in glory to judge the living and the dead, and to give unto everyone according to his works. And Domitian hears them and sees that they're basically farmers. They have, they have like calluses in their hands. Like they're just rural people. They're not hugely influential. They're just average Joes. So Domitian releases them. They go back home. Hegesippus says that they remain as leaders in the church. He says when they were released, they guided the churches since they were witnesses and relatives of the Lord, i.e. relatives of Jesus. And after peace was established, they remained alive until the time of Trajan, which would be like the early 100s as well. So they're viewed even by imperial authorities as key leaders in the church, even if they're not massively significant. They're just known as leaders, and they're also known to still be relatives of Jesus, all, you know, like 70-ish years after he died, a little less than that, but 60-odd years. So yeah, they're hugely significant. You even have, in certain Jewish documents, indications that one of the grandsons, in particular James, was well known to the rabbis, and information about him seems to have made it into various rabbinic documents. Unfortunately, James is viewed at, or Jacob is viewed as a as a, essentially an apostate to, according to the Jewish authorities, and so his presentation in these documents is not, you know, a positive one. But of course, as a Christian, you might expect that. And that's another kind of secondary confirmation about the importance of his life, so important that he's included even in these ancient Jewish documents.
Well, I think probably one of the last questions I would have for you is just connecting it back to some of our listeners. It's kind of a two-part question, I guess. What can our listeners learn from the earthly family of Jesus? And sort of in a related way, what do they teach us about the gospel?
Well, I think they... I'll say there's lots of really cool things about this. One is we can learn that the gospel is in real history. There was a real family. It actually happened. If your brothers are going to call you God, you better rise from the dead. brothers don't typically do that. It's a really interesting thing. We can also see that the brothers, the family, the relatives of Jesus, although they recorded their connection to him, didn't necessarily use that for power and authority. We have no records of that. In fact, if you read Jude and James's letter, they almost underplay that because they want to promote Christ and not their special status. So there's a real sense of humility, even though there are bloodline relatives. And in fact, there seems to be so much humility that although the brothers of the Lord are big deals, so are the apostles and so are other leaders, Polycarp, Papias, Clement of Rome, who writes in the 90s, and many others who become these sort of big deal Christians. It's not about, you know, biological relation to Jesus, but a spiritual relation to Jesus. As Hebrews 2 says, that when we're adopted into the family of God, Jesus is not ashamed to call us brothers. And he becomes our adopted brother as we are adopted into the family of God, where the Father becomes our, you know, adopted father by grace, as what is true by the true of the Son by nature becomes true of us by grace. So there's some really interesting things there that I think we can learn. I think lastly, we all like heroes of the faith, but sometimes our heroes of the faith are very recent. It's like, I don't know, who's famous today, like a Billy Graham or something like that. I think that there's a lot of really important people who lived in years past that can be heroes of the faith and can inspire us. James the Just would be one great example. And you can read my article. I quote in full his sort of martyrdom story, which is wyattgraham.com. It's on the front page. I also created a resource tab where I have a chart of the family of Jesus if someone's curious. So you can actually see it charted out because it can be a little confusing if you just read just textual words. I think that's really important. I mean, I think sometimes as evangelicals or Protestants, we're a little afraid to go too deep in the past to find heroes of the faith. I just think probably just need to put that away and just say they're Christians who love Jesus and we can learn from them. We can learn from James, how he prayed, the manner of his death. We can learn from the grandsons of Jude, how they faithfully proclaim the truth in front of Domitian. I think we can learn from all of them just like anyone else. Jesus was building his church. They had the Spirit too. And I think if we close ourselves off to historical and spiritual knowledge like this, we lose something important that we could otherwise have that could inspire and strengthen our faith.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to today's guest, Dr. Wyatt Graham, Executive Director of the Davenant Institute and writer of the piece we've been discussing today, What Happened to the Family of Jesus. You can read it at wyattgraham.com. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Tammy Claughton with practical suggestions on reaching out to our neighbors.
And it's like, hey, I just want to know you. I want to be curious about you. I want to get to know you. And, you know, it's not interrogation. It's that, hey, I'm curious. And keeping that attitude of curiosity and accepting people where they're at and not expecting them to look or be a certain way, but just honestly meeting them where they're at.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.